Welcome back to the show. Today we are talking about trust, and I don't know if you think people trust you or not, but you know, I like to think people do, but then how do I know for sure? So I got kind of interested in this topic, and where do you go when you're interested in a topic? You go to the experts on the subject. So I found the Trust Ambassador, and that is Robert Whipple, and he is the author of Leading with Trust is Like Sailing Downwind, as well as various other books on leadership, but primarily on the issue of trust. Robert, welcome to the show. This is a really niche subject you've got here.
Thanks, Stephanie.
I think I found you via blog, and something caught my interest in your writing. So let's just start. Let's talk about trust, what it is, and why it's so important.
Sure. Well, there's all kinds of definition for trust, and everybody has their own pet. Quite often, frequently mentioned one is, you know, do what you say you're going to do is what trust means, or keep your promises. A lot of people talk about having integrity as being a good working definition of what trust is all about. The one is my favorite is, if I trust you, I believe that you're going to do what you think is in my best interest always.
Ooh.
Even if I don't like it at the time.
Ooh. Well, I like that too. Say it again.
Well, if I trust you, I believe you're going to always act in my best interest, and that is what you think is in my best interest, even if it's not comfortable for me at that particular point in time. So it's kind of a hard-edged thing, but that's what trust really is. I'm really putting my faith in you to the extent that I know you're going to do the best you can for me.
Hey, I like that one. I can totally buy into that. Oh, good. So what made you specialize in this area? As I said, very, very unique niche.
Well, I've been studying leadership for 40 years and a practitioner for 33 years in a major corporation and ran a large division. So I've always been fascinated by the whole subject of leadership, and came, after studying it for so long, to the realization that trust is really the center heartbeat of good leadership. You can't have good leadership if there isn't high trust. And unfortunately, in many organizations, the trust really isn't as high as it needs to be for credible leadership.
Are you talking about within an organization as a whole, with its specific people in the organization, or can you explain?
Well, coming at it from a leadership perspective, it's really from the people that are trying to generate the productivity and generate the goodwill within the population. But trust occurs between people at all levels. And so as long as I know someone and they know me, then there's a level of trust that's there. It's kind of like a bank account. There's a balance of trust between two people if they know each other. And we go around all day, every day, when we do things and say things and have phone calls or write emails, we're making deposits or withdrawals, if you will, to the trust account between individuals all the time.
It is sounds similar to the Stephen Covey emotional bank account, but this is just the trust deposit.
Right.
So I like people to think about, you know, we're talking about leadership, and a lot of what you write is about leadership, and a lot of people kind of put that off if they're not leading a company or leading a business, but you know, I think we're all leaders in some way, shape, or form. Everybody is looking to us, whether it's in your community, whether you're the leader of the house, or leader of your team. We're all leaders.
Absolutely, absolutely true. And also think about yourself as a leader for yourself.
Yeah.
So you are in a leadership position, number one, for your own life. And you can ask yourself, do I trust me? Becomes an interesting conundrum.
Hmm. So if it's something that I'm going to assume, you know, we could all do with building a little bit better trust. And for some reason, teenagers come to my mind. There's always a big trust issue with teenagers. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, teenagers sure can test the mettle of anyone. What happens is as students get up through the, you know, the 15 to 20 year time frame is usually when it hits, you know, they're really changing their relationship to the world and trying to grow out of the dependence on the parents and become more independent. And that means they're willing to take risks and willing to experiment in a lot of ways, which of course drives all the parents crazy. So it becomes a very challenging thing to be able to maintain an environment where trust is
quite a lot of work, but I know that you have some tips to make it easier for us, and we're going to find out what they are when we come back. You're listening to the Superstation, CGOB 68. Keep it, and it's important in all areas of life, and we're talking about leadership specifically, but leading yourself, leading your family, leading the world. Is that too fluffy? No, it's not, because we can do that. Can't we, Robert? Yeah. Robert Whipple's on the line. He's the author of Leading with Trust is Like Sailing Downwind. And what, I guess how I first found you, I was reading, I guess it was your blog, and two words that I had never really heard put together before that captured my interest, and those words were reinforcing candor.
Right, and it doesn't matter if you're an executive or a CEO or a mother or a friend. The idea behind reinforcing candor as a way to build trust means that if let's say I'm your boss, what I try to do is I try to establish a safe environment such that when I do something that you don't really think is correct, maybe it's in your eyes just not consistent with the vision that we said we were going to do. Maybe we have a vision to treat people well, and I make a decision that you don't think is really consistent with that, that you feel safe to tell me that and say, Bob, that's not really what we're supposed to be doing here, and know that I'm going to make you glad that you brought that up rather than punish you for bringing it up.
Even though I don't feel really glad that maybe you brought it up, because I'm going to assume that when that's happened, and I'm sure that's happened to all of us, our natural inclination, our natural reaction is our back goes up, we get defensive, we want to.
That's right. And if as a leader, you can understand that it's in your best interest to swallow hard and make sure that the person, first of all, you treat them like an adult. You know, you treat them fairly. And second of all, you listen. Listen carefully to what the point is. And third of all, you don't reject that out of hand and say, no, you don't understand. And you just sort of slap them across the face figuratively. What you do is you pay attention and you make sure that if there's a disconnect, and you know, you may still agree to disagree at the end of the conversation, but if you make the person glad they brought it up as opposed to sorry, then you've made a real neat deposit in the trust account with that person and other people that happen to witness that exchange as well.
Well, I think if we want to, whether it's a customer service based or, as you said, if you're a mother, and we want to people to feel, I want them to feel free to come up and give us their opinion or let us know if there is disconnect. So I think the idea of reinforcing candor is, let's maybe just define candor for us.
Well, candor is if someone sees something that doesn't seem right, to be able to say, hey, that doesn't seem right to me.
I think it's very cool when our kids can do that
right
to us, right? And that we can have the smarts to admit when we've done wrong, and even with this technique that you're talking about, it doesn't mean admitting you're wrong or agreeing with them necessarily.
Yes, you don't always have to reverse your field or say, you know, gee, I must have been wrong about that. That's not it at all. The idea is just to treat people as equals and treat them with respect and handle the conversation in a way that the person doesn't feel just, you know, like they've been hit by a 2x4.
Right. The response that kind of comes to my mind is thank you for sharing.
Yes, right. And I really appreciate that, because if you didn't tell me, mm-hmm. I wouldn't know it. And like, maybe we, you know, let me explain why I said that or why I did that. Hopefully I can make you understand a little bit, or maybe you can make me understand why it isn't right. But at least we're talking intelligently instead of yelling at each other or hitting each other kind of thing, and emotionally.
Well, Robert, why is it that trust takes so long to develop and it's so easy to come crashing down?
Yeah, I have a theory that I call the ratchet effect, is that when trust is really built in like little small steps, little small increments, like the click of a ratchet, click, click, click on a daily basis, we're doing lots of little things. We're reinforcing someone. We're showing empathy. We're praising them when they do good work. We're trying to build up trust. Even just saying hi in a friendly way is a little deposit. So we build up trust in small little increments. It's pretty hard to make a huge deposit in trust with someone. while, maybe there's a special event, like if you have to land a plane in the Hudson River or something like that. Well, okay, yeah, you can make a big deposit, but usually trust is built in small increments over a long period of time, 10, 15 years. That's how we build up an account of trust. But when the little lever that's holding the ratchet in place flies out when we make a withdrawal, all of that equity can be lost in a heartbeat. One single sentence in an email or something like that that just doesn't hit right, and people will say, you know, I trusted him for 5 years and he's always been square with me, but after he wrote that, I'll never trust him again. And so what we have to do is we have to have a mechanism for inserting a little pawl back into the ratchet when there's a withdrawal, so we only lose one or two teeth rather than having it spin all the way back to zero. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so tell me the tools. How do we do that?
The tool is using reinforcing candor. That's exactly what that does. When they have a withdrawal and someone says, that's wrong, I don't believe you're even consistent when you say that, that's a withdrawal. And if we reinforce that candor, that stops the withdrawal, and so we keep most of the equity that we had built up over the years.
How else can we do it?
How else can we?
So the reinforcing candor, but it's not always that everybody is going to be presenting us with our indiscretions, perhaps.
Well, another great way to build trust is to extend trust to others. Trust is a kind of reciprocal thing. If you pick up your child and twirl your child around, the child is trusting you completely with his or her life. And, you know, children trust. And you won't let go. You can't let go. And the reason you can't let go is because they are extending their trust in you, and you respond with this reciprocal higher level of trust. And that's the way it is with people. So what I tell leaders at work is, you want people to trust you more, you show more trust to them, and they will begin to trust you more. That's another way to do it.
That makes sense. What about admitting your mistakes? Because I know that's sometimes pretty difficult to swallow when, you know, even if no one else has caught you, and perhaps it comes under that integrity umbrella. So nobody else knows, nobody else has seen, but you know that you've screwed up.
That's a wonderful way to build trust. If I would come to you and say, you know, Stephanie, I messed up. You would never know this if I didn't tell you, but here's what happened. Can you see how that would immediately build trust between us?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Especially if you would never know. I'd say, I'm blowing myself in. I'm saying, hey, you know, this is something that would be unknown to you, but here's what it was. Now, most leaders, it's an interesting phenomenon. When I get leaders together, I can get 100 leaders in a room and say, hey, if you admit a mistake, does that increase respect in you or decrease the respect in you? And all of those leaders, and maybe there's one psychopath in the group, but almost all of them will say, yes, admitting mistakes increases the level of trust and respect. But unfortunately, about 80% of them, when they go on the shop floor the next day and make a mistake, they try to duck it, or they try to blame somebody. In other words, they don't do what intellectually they know is a way to increase trust. And the reason is, they're ashamed.
They think they're in a position that they should know everything, that they shouldn't make mistakes. Is that the thing?
Exactly. And they think it's going to harpoon the respect. While intellectually they know that if someone admits a mistake, it's really a way to build trust. Now, it's not true in every case. If you make the same mistake time after time after time and keep admitting it, you know, pretty soon people are going to say, this guy's a wacko.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, you know, it can't be, if it's such a bonehead mistake that it reveals you as to be a totally incompetent person, well, then admitting it only, you know, that's not a good thing either.
Right.
So, but most mistakes that leaders or people in authority make are honest errors. They had good intentions and it didn't work out. Well, when you do that, and you know, if you don't do it every day, and you have the opportunity to admit that mistake, it really makes a large deposit in trust.
I think that people have a lot of respect for people who can admit their mistakes, and we like to see our leaders as human beings as well. So that counts for a lot. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more with Robert Whipple. We're talking about the trust factor. Principle. He is the author of Leading with Trust is Like Sailing Downwind, and we like to sail downwind. Let's make things easier. Sometimes people make things so complicated, and they don't have to be. Robert, are we making things more complicated than they have to be?
Well, that's the analogy for the title of my book. The idea is I observe most leaders working their heart out, trying to do a good job, and they work incredibly hard, and it's like they're sailing against the wind. You know how you sail against the wind, where you go tacking back and forth, and it's like it takes you forever to get there, and you're working twice as hard, and everything is difficult. You have to be perfect with everything, and it's like, oh.
Just a lot of pressure.
And everybody gets wet. But when you figure out a way, and this is what trust is all about, when you figure out a way to align things so that your world is such that where you're trying to get to, your destination, is in the direction the wind is already blowing, then the whole world is a lot better. You can go twice as fast or three times as fast. It's a lot less work. You can sit back and relax and just kind of steer the boat. And so that's the analogy that I see the difference between leaders that don't understand how to build trust and do understand how to build trust.
My wise old father always used to say, don't work harder, work smarter. And I think this is a way that we could definitely work smarter if we learn to use trust in our favor. My question to you, can you respect somebody that you don't trust? And can you trust somebody that you don't respect?
Yeah, that's an excellent analogy because it really trips people up. One would think that you can't respect somebody that you don't trust. But in fact, we do it all the time. We can respect someone who's in a position of power, respect, say, a mayor or a congressman or something like that. We can have respect for the fact that someone has done some good work and gotten to a position of power, but we don't trust that person any further than we can throw them.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, if you reverse that logic and say, can I trust someone I don't respect? That's a lot harder to find an example of where, you know, if I don't respect somebody, how can I trust them?
Yeah, tougher. Much tougher.
Much tougher to find an example. Now, I have found some, you know, but in reality, respect does need to be there for there to be trust.
Hmm. I got to go back to the teenager question, that probably because I have one. So, Robert, I may as well do some self-serving work here. How can I get my teenager to trust me more?
Well, you have to earn it. You have to be consistent. You have to extend trust to them, and sometimes that's really hard because they don't seem to earn it, right? And they seem to be, you know, all over the place. So sometimes they're looking to us and testing us. They're always testing us. And the idea of, you know, extending trust to them wherever you can, or putting boundaries on, one of the things that is really important for trust is to have boundaries and say, this is acceptable. This, you know, a lot of times parents get in trouble because the children don't recognize the rules aren't clear, or they change all the time, or they play one parent off against the other, and then that becomes something where the trust is lost in the bargain.
I think mean what you say what you mean was very...
And don't be afraid to be the parent. That's the tough part.
Yeah, that's it. You know, it's easy to be a parent, but it's hard to be a good parent. It's hard to be a good parent, boy. Sometimes the easy road sure seems like less trouble. But I know it's worth it. I'll keep plugging along. It's working so far, I think. You've got some myths about leadership. Let's talk about those.
Oh, there's a lot of myths about leadership. One is, for example, that good leaders are more intelligent than poor leaders. Leadership doesn't have a whole lot to do with being a super intelligent person. It has a whole lot more to do with what they call emotional intelligence,
mm-hmm.
where we understand how to get along well with people. Another myth is that really good leaders work harder than poor leaders. I really see it the other way around. I see the poor leaders working like crazy because they don't have trust. They haven't built trust. And so what happens is they have to be perfect. And you know, they really sweat it out because how do I do this? How do I spin this? How do I say this? And they have to have everything be perfect or else people are going to jump down their throats. Where a really high-end leader that's been able to build trust has a lot more fun, is able to relax and be a human being and make mistakes because human beings do make mistakes and people will forgive them.
You know what I like the part about, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be the smartest person. You know, success is for everybody. It's not just for the very few elite people. I think it's for everybody in various forms, and we can go after, we can get it, and it's not this elusive animal that is only for the select, most brilliant few.
That's right. It's all about what's in your heart and how you treat people. And this whole concept of emotional intelligence, that's much more important than IQ. Because, you know, think about it. If you have a person that has a really, really high IQ, that doesn't guarantee that person is going to be very successful. In fact, people with extremely high IQs have a lot of problems relating to other people.
Oh, well, that makes me feel better. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Robert's going to tell us how to measure trust. You're listening to the Superstation CJOB 68. Going, learning a little bit more about trust, I hope you've got a few ideas to put into your toolkit. And that's kind of the idea, is that we just collect as many tools as we can so that when things come up, and then we can just pull out this one and that one and the other one and use whichever one will work for us. So we're talking with Robert Whipple, who is the author of Leading with Trust is Like Sailing Downwind. He's talking to us from Rochester, New York. Welcome back, Robert.
Thank you.
Now, you promised that you would tell us how to measure trust.
Well, you know, it's really, there's a lot of different methods. I'll mention a couple. The quote that always comes to my mind is the famous Yogi Berra quote, which says, you can observe a lot by looking. And really, that's, trust is really easy to spot. You can walk in a room of people, and they don't even have to be talking, and you can just feel the atmosphere in that room very quickly and get an assessment of what's the relationship. Just watch how people are sitting and how they interface with each other. And when they do talk, they say volumes about how they, you know, either respect each other and trust each other or one another at each other's throat all the time. So just by observing and paying attention, you can get a pretty good, accurate viewpoint.
All those nonverbals.
Yeah, another thing that's really an interesting way is to see what are people saying. Are they talking down? Are they talking negative about other people? Or are they basically talking up? That's another good way to measure trust. I have an instrument in my kit bag that I use in the corporate world to allow people to very quickly determine the level of trust in an organization. I use it when I'm doing diagnostic prior to going in and working with executives on how to improve trust within the leadership team of their corporation. So that's another way. There's a lot of instruments I happen to have developed my own that is a very quick way to measure trust. So there's a lot of ways to do it.
So we're going to put up your link for your website up on Your Life Unlimited. We'll be blogging about our talk today and put some tips up there for everybody to check it out. And they can find you at leadergrow.com if they want to know more. Thank you so much for your time tonight, Robert. It's a pleasure talking to you. Pleasure reading your book. And they can get that at your website as well, leadergrow.com, right?
Yes.
Perfect.
Thank you, Stephanie. It's been fun.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks, Justine, for making us sound good. Check out Your Life Unlimited on the web and join us on Facebook. Check out next week's show. We're going to be talking about something that will shift your mood, your attitude, and really your whole way of life. And it'll kick up your self-esteem just a notch or two. Any questions, comments, suggestions, send them my way, yourlifeunlimited.ca. Thanks for listening. Good night.